The mountains or the seashore? It's a perennial vacation planning question. But whether you go to the mountains or the sea or any place else where the grandeur of creation is on display, you'll get a taste of a critical element in a Wyoming Catholic college education. This is Dr. Jim Tomkowicz, and you're listening to the After Dinner Scholar, Wyoming Catholic College's weekly podcast about the great books and the liberal arts, which, may I add, is now available on iTunes. You may already be aware that Wyoming Catholic College freshmen begin their four-year journey into the liberal arts with a 21-day journey into the Wyoming wilderness. Now, 3 weeks of backpacking is an exercise in self-discovery, during which the students learn innumerable leadership skills. But the freshman expedition is much more than that. It prepares them intellectually and spiritually for their studies. Immersed in the natural world, they gaze at the stars. They marvel at the speckled trout. They grasp stony crags at the summit of mountains topping 12,000 feet. They look into the faces of wildflowers, and they shudder at the voice of the thunder. Ever since the creation of the world, wrote St. Paul to the Romans, God's invisible attributes of eternal power and divinity have been able to be understood and perceived in what he has made. That is, nature speaks to us about the character, nature, and glory of God. It is God's first book through which he reveals himself. To talk about why knowing God in nature is so vital to the liberal arts, we are joined by Dr. Stanley Grove, Assistant Professor of Philosophy. Dr. Grove, in addition to being a great outdoorsman himself, spends hours in the woods and meadows around Lander teaching field science to our students. Welcome, Dr. Grove. At Wyoming Catholic College, we have a core belief that nature, the great outdoors, is the proper context in which education must occur. Why is that?
The central idea here at Wyoming Catholic College is that the whole person is formed by giving due attention to all of that person's faculties, and those faculties have to be approached in a certain order, beginning with what stimulates wonder as an authentic desire for education in the first place. All knowledge comes through the senses, though ultimately it transcends the sensible. But the senses are the arena of our first engagement with a reality that's outside our minds. So we have to have our sight, hearing, and the other external senses, as well as imagination, memory, the so-called internal senses, attuned to our surroundings in order that the process of wonder and inquiry can be launched as we make our journey toward wisdom. And there's no better domain within which to focus our initial sense engagement than the domain of nature. That is the domain given by the Creator without further modification at the hands of man. Art and technology do have a place in man's discovery of reality, even in his self-discovery, but they're also more problematic in some sense than the realm of pure nature. Art and technology are unavoidably affected by human intentionality, for better or for worse. But nature exhibits only the intentionality of God. Not surprisingly then, nature, for that reason, inspires awe, surpassing wonder. Not only is our mind set to questioning in the face of nature's marvel and mystery, but it's humbled at the very outset in doing so.
Well, you mentioned wonder, and in these kinds of conversations, that word comes up a lot. Could you tell us a little bit more about wonder?
Yeah, St. Thomas says that wonder is a species of fear, which might seem a very strange thing, till we realize that fear, taken in the larger sense, is the attitude which is, or at least ought to be, ours in the face of what's greater than we are. Now, that can be greater in just its raw power to destroy. That would be my fear of an attacking grizzly bear. But more generally, we mean that fear refers to something, triggered by something greater than us in any way. For example, in our ability to comprehend. So we have the psalmist saying, "Fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge." Even Aristotle, the pagan, is getting close to this when he says at the beginning of his monumental treatise on wisdom, the Metaphysics, that all men by nature desire to know. In other words, wonder for each of us is the necessary beginning to the eventual attainment of wisdom. We have to acknowledge our ignorance, our intellectual poverty, our smallness in the face of reality before we can hope to discover the path to self-fulfillment. So the encounter with the vastness and majesty of the natural world is a most appropriate introduction to the fullness of intellectual and moral life.
So our students then get out there and they realize that they're a speck on the side of this mountain, and that has its effect on them.
That's very salutary.
Yeah. How does this emphasis on nature comport with the other approaches to education, with, for example, the art and the poetry and the literature the students study once they get here?
Yeah, that's interesting. There's actually a pretty close analogy. The encounter both with art and with nature can be characterized as an encounter with things in their existential intensity, with the reality or the particularity of things as they are. Either kind of encounter must provoke in us an awareness of not having, a desire to possess what is being encountered, to possess it in knowledge and in love. But a key difference is that art is man's interpretation of nature, just as technology is man's application of nature, while nature itself is uninterpreted, or we might say self-interpreting. So each has its place. If nature represents the intentions of God, it still requires investigation, pondering, analysis, in order to yield up its secrets. Art, on the other hand, is less opaque, precisely because its purpose is none other than interpretation. So an oak tree is beautiful because it's the handiwork of God. A masterful painting of the oak tree is also beautiful because it discloses to us, it reveals to us more of that divine handiwork than was at first evident. It's part of the providential plan for man. In fact, it's a key element of his grandeur as the steward of creation, that he, man, be participant in this artistic interpretation of nature, this disclosure by means of his own intellect and other faculties of the inner meaning of things. But art also runs the risk of departing, sometimes maliciously, I think, from the integrity of nature. Art can become a distortion, or at least a distraction. It can become art for art's sake rather than what it should be, art for man's sake. The artist's vision, or the poet's, or the author's, these are all forms of art in the sense I'm using it in right now. This vision is always partial, no matter how insightful. And so it can be problematic insofar as the part is taken for the whole. So we'd be foolish to disdain that masterful, revelatory painting of a majestic tree. But we're no less in trouble if we disregard the tree itself, because after all, we have the painting. You need both. I think art, again, taking it generally to include literature, music, poetry, and so on, and the direct, unmediated encounter with nature, each has its necessary role. They're complementary. Each has to be returned to. At Wyoming Catholic College, the students are immersed in both observation of nature and the recitation of poetry from the outset. And this is really not a coincidence.
Now, when you use art, would you include also science in that?
No.
No.
By art, I mean something more in the practical order, which is ordered towards some kind of a production. Whether it's a mental product or a physical product, it is something which is in turn ordained to a further end, something to be employed towards an ultimate end, whereas science can be said to contain, I guess you would say, an end within itself. Merely to know something in the mode of science is already to have achieved the goal of science. Uh-huh. That knowledge need not be placed at the service of anything further. It's the object of contemplation in and of itself.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, nature has got a lot of attention in recent decades. The environmental movement, setting aside national parks and preserves, and all sorts of recreation to do with the outdoors. I'm told that they are suddenly going to be restricting the number of people who can run up Half Dome at Yosemite National Park these days because there are so many people wanting to get up
there. To try to maintain the natural aspect.
Now, are these related to the emphasis you've described?
Yes and no. The modern turn toward nature is in part a reaction to the dominance of the artificial, of the technological in our lives. And this manifests a sound instinct. Too much technology has distanced us from our native setting, our proper environment, blurring the lines between what's real and what's really real. As a result, the restorative and inspirational aspect of nature, even among those who've lost sight entirely of nature's God, are exerting a new appeal. What, the last half century or so especially has seen this sort of renaissance of interest in nature. Now, a concern for preserving nature has also arisen as a very belated response to our long-standing carelessness in exploiting rather than managing properly what God has entrusted to us. Ours is an age which is turning away from the one true God, and so unfortunately we will often embrace idols instead of the one true God. And so in some quarters the environmental movement has taken on an idolatrous intensity. But we do have to recognize, in all humility, that our stewardship, our aboriginal obligation toward the lower realms of nature has been found wanting. And this recognition and this obligation, which fill the pages of Pope Francis's recent encyclical, Laudato Si, this is most appropriate to the Christian.
And is seeking oneness with nature a dangerous goal? I mean, you hear people talking about that. Does that diminish man and his spiritual integrity that makes him a steward over creation and having dominion over creation?
I'd say there's two ways of responding to that question. On the side of knowing, we have to say again that all knowledge comes through the senses and that this sense knowledge is primordially a knowledge of nature. And since knowing is a kind of union affected with the thing known, we can hardly deny that to become one with nature through experience and knowledge is indeed necessary and a profound thing. It's how we come to know God and ourselves and our relationship with God, preparing the way for revealed truths of the supernatural order, of course. But when we say with the psalmist that the heavens declare the glory of God, we certainly mean that each of us, according to his talents, must be attentive to those heavens, interrogating them, in order for this declaration on their part to become manifest precisely as such. So everything in the natural world exists in order to be known. Knowledge is the beginning of stewardship. Laudato Si was clear on that as well. The cosmic given is intelligible through and through. No scientist would doubt this. And we are first and foremost intellectual beings, agents of truth, as one of my teachers used to call it. We're situated at the summit of the physical creation in order to know and hence to love, to rise from things that have been made to the maker. On the other hand, what we increasingly come to know in the study of nature is that nature is our origin and matrix, the source of our very being, on the side of matter, of course. I'm not referring to the spirit. The stuff of the universe is our stuff. We are atoms. We are stardust, nourished by the air and water and soil and sun. We are causally related to other living things, not in a static and more or less meaningless way, but dynamically and holistically. So it's fascinating that in this regard, Genesis does not speak of man as being created from nothing, but Genesis speaks of him as being fashioned from the slime or the dust of the earth. And then woman is described as being made from Adam's rib. These images portray our closeness to the rest of the natural world and our even more intimate closeness within the one humanity. So to disdain nature as our origin, our sustaining principle, is really to disdain ourselves. And conversely, to seek communion, unity with nature, and to inquire diligently into its secrets is really to follow the ancient wisdom, to live the examined life. Know thyself.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Dr. Tonkowicz. It's been a pleasure.
Every flower, says an Eastern Orthodox hymn, is fragrant through the power of the Holy Spirit in a delicate flow of aroma and tenderness of color, the beauty of the great contained in what is small. Praise and honor to God who gives life, who spreads forth the meadows like a flowering carpet, who crowns the fields with golden ears of wheat and azure basilisks, and the soul with the joy of contemplation. If at all possible, get out today and make that joy of contemplation yours. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.